Yeah, I harp on in the book too. Like, I think acceptance is a superpower, but our society generally labels it as a weakness. Makes sense? Like, oh, that means you don't care. No, like, you can still really care, but you can accept and let go of the range. And then now you can be grounded and commit to who you want to be and show up and, you know, get after it, you know, today. And like, even just think of like goal scoring and forwards. Like, it's like, if I can't accept not scoring today, well, I guarantee you're going to play a real tense. Like, if you can't willing to accept, like, you might not score. And I use this thing called the screw it analogy, which is, well, if you can't accept it, then maybe you should quit. And it's like, I don't want you to quit, but like, it's the reality that you have the choice to, you can either, I need to, have to, should have to score mentality, or you can say, screw it, let it go, and I can accept it and just go play free and trust myself.
That was Dr. Cassidy Preston, founder of CEP Mindset and author of the upcoming book, Mindset First. And you are listening to the Up My Hockey Podcast with Jason Podolin. Welcome to Up My Hockey with Jason Podolin, where we deconstruct the NHL journey, discuss what it takes to make it, and have a few laughs along the way. I'm your host, Jason Podolin, a 31st overall draft pick who played 41 NHL games, but thought he was destined for 1,000. Learn from my story and those of my guests. This is a hockey podcast about reaching your potential. Hey there, and welcome back, or welcome to the Up My Hockey Podcast with Jason Podolin. I'm your host, Jason Podolin, and we are back here for another episode with Dr. Cassidy Preston as a guest today. Dr. Cassidy Preston is somebody that I have been aware of essentially for the last couple of years, you know, being in the space of mindset development for hockey players. There are a few people that are in the space. You know, there's a few players, as we would call it. And Dr. Cassidy is definitely somebody that's come across my radar. He's well established. He is a PhD, and he has been in locker rooms and dressing rooms, and he's been with organizations and associations, and have followed his stuff. So I was aware of him and what he's been doing, and. And yeah, there was kind of an idea of maybe we should talk, maybe we could collaborate, maybe we could go have coffee. You know, there was kind of all these sort of things lingering in the back of my head that maybe our paths would cross one day. And as things go and as this world works, while I was aware of him, he was also aware of me. And he reached out, him and his team reached out over LinkedIn, wanting to share the book, that he's just written a book. They wanted to be able to talk about his book, Mindset First, and thought that the podcast would be a good avenue to do that. And was wondering if I'd be interested in having him on as a guest. And I mean, obviously the answer was yes, because here we are with an episode with Dr. Cassidy Preston, and we are talking about his book, Mindset First, and then about his career as a hockey player, his journey through the sport, and what compelled him to, you know, to go to school, and now wanting to help other athletes with their mindset. And it was a really fun discussion. Fun's maybe the wrong word. Well, not really. I did have fun, so that's a very correct word. But it was. I love playing ping pong with guys like Dr. Cassidy, because his approach is very similar to kind of my approach, and so our ideologies align on a lot of levels. And so just being able to ask him some questions and have some back and forth on different scenarios or experiences, I think you're going to find a lot of value in here. And also I was curious about, like, from his perspective of the people he works with, you know, what is the right age that he thinks in his experience should start with mindset training and the values of it, and who the common client is for him, like what state of distress are they in? Are they really going through it? Are they high performers that are coming to try and optimize? So I was able to ask a few questions that I was curious about, because I see some tendencies within my own, you know, practice, my own client stream, about who comes and what type of age it is and what they're going through. So having the opportunity to chat about that, what he finds important, you know, the value system that he believes in, is what was really fun for me to dive in there and dig in. And I think the biggest commonality, I believe, is that this stuff matters in a human perspective and in a player perspective, and leaving it to chance, like leaving it to the automatic way the world works and the way we usually operate on a daily basis to hope that we figure it out, that we make the right connections, you know, about challenge, about defining moments, about preparation, about your practice habits, about your results-based system. Like if we just hope that it works out, that we've done a really good job as parents, or we've done a really good job as players, that we've got it all figured out, it just seems so unreasonable to think that that's worth the risk or the chance, you know. And that's what Dr. Cassidy talks about here, is that, you know, this is totally not worth the chance, and it's totally worth investing in yesterday, so we can be better tomorrow, weeks, years down the line. And we both understand on a personal level the power that this stuff can have. You know, I use it on a daily basis and allude to it in the conversation. You know, even having Dr. Cassidy Preston on, a lot of people wouldn't have done that in my space. I know that for a fact, because we do the same thing and we service the same people. He talks to young hockey players and junior hockey players, and I talk to young hockey players and junior hockey players about mindset. That could be a very intimidating space for me. Or why would I want to promote somebody who could be potentially taking clients or revenue from Up My Hockey? That would be a fixed mindset way of looking at that. And I chose, and there's the key, and that's what we work with our players on, is now there is a new choice if we want to have a choice. And if we believe there is a choice between how we want to operate from a mindset level, being it a growth mindset or a fixed mindset. And I chose to have a growth mindset perspective of it. This is an opportunity to talk to somebody who's been in the space for a while. This is an opportunity to talk to somebody who has a successful practice that is working with athletes and making a difference. It's an opportunity for me to learn, to ask questions, to make a connection, potentially a relationship. So there's so many things that I deemed would be beneficial to him. And at the underlying piece of the whole thing is the what are we trying to do? Right? Like the whole reason why this podcast exists, the whole reason why I do what I do now from a business perspective, why I do what I do to make money, to pay my mortgage, to live, is to help athletes be better. Right? Like that's what I do. That is what Dr. Cassidy Preston does. And that is the main goal. Like that's the genesis story behind the whole thing. So if there is someone out there that listens to this and chooses to work with Dr. Cassidy Preston, then we were successful in this discussion. You know, if you choose to work with me, then we were successful in this discussion. If you learn something from this discussion and you apply it to your own game or to your own parenting or to your own, you know, way you get through life, then we were successful. So that's kind of how the building blocks works and how I see mindset playing out in my own life and in my own business and with my clients, is that it shows up all the time. And I'm getting better and better at recognizing when I have these choices and these opportunities available to me, that I can choose one path or I can choose another. And when I step into the one that serves me and serves the idea of what a growth mindset means, I usually grow, I usually expand, I usually feel better about myself and what I'm doing. So, lots of fun sharing some personal stories there. But I think you're really going to enjoy this one. Doctor has a lot of great things to say. I'm excited about the book and look forward to reading it. It's not available yet, but it sounds like by the time this episode is released, he's just going to be in the process of releasing it. So again, it's Mindset First for those of you who are interested. And without further ado, I guess let's get you to the conversation with Dr. Cassidy Preston. Dr. Cassidy Preston, welcome to the podcast.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, Jason. I'm excited to dive in here.
Yeah, no, as we were just talking off air, you know, you reached out over LinkedIn. I think somebody from your team actually reached out a little bit earlier. I've just been a little bit underwater, and it just so happens that the world's collided, and here we are. It worked out on a Tuesday. So thanks so much for being here. I look forward to, you know, whatever, getting into it, really getting into your history, yeah, getting into what you're doing now, your book I know that you wanted to discuss. So yeah, I'm excited to get to know your story a little bit better. So maybe we can start kind of with that. I know you're the founder of CEP Mindset, which I have on the screen there, which is a high performance type company for different athletes. But you were an athlete yourself growing up, correct?
Yeah, though, like a lot of Canadian, you know, boys, hockey players had this dream of the Canadian dream of playing in the NHL. And one of the big sparks and the things what really got me going into the mental game was going into my NHL draft year, getting close to that dream. I was like, this is the year. I had all these, you know, big goals and expectations, and I fell flat on my face. Like, I just had a 0 point first year in the OHL. Like, things did not go my way. Things spiraled. I got healthy scratch like 48 times. Like, it was a rough year and really kind of created this void of like, hey, well, there's got to be a different way. Like, how do I deal with the pressures, the expectations, and can play more consistent and avoid that downward spiral? And then, you know, I was able to bounce back, learn lots of great grit from that. Like, a lot of everything else in my life seemed a lot easier since that year. So that's the good news out of when you face adversity. And, you know, still got to play the game and went on, played 5 years of junior, a little bit, a small cup of minor pro, and then 5 years at Canadian University, and made lots of great friends and those things. But learning those lessons around dealing with adversity on like, how do I actually work on my mindset, especially as you're climbing the ranks as a hockey player, let alone at those higher levels, it's so important and valuable, but it's not easy to do. And that's why your work and love what you're doing with the podcast and be able to have discussions with you is so important, because a lot of players are like, well, what is it? How do I work on it? Like, it's just this vague thing. There's all these cliches out there, like, well, just be positive or be confident and like, don't worry about it. It's like that stuff doesn't work. Like, there's more to it than that. Like, that might be the outcome, but it's not the how-to. So that's what really inspired me to, like, I went to school for a long time, real long time, 12 years, like, just doing the research and that stuff. And then, you know, I've got to learn some from other great, you know, practitioners like Todd Herman does the alter ego stuff, like the Black Mamba mentality. Yeah. And John DeMartini's been a good mentor, and lots of other great people to help me curate the system and the strategies that we use with athletes and high performers in other areas as well to work on their mindset and their mental game. So that's the short of it. And I'm sure we can dive into lots of other challenges I faced in my career, but that's the intro.
Yeah, no, that's great stuff. And I do want to touch on all of that, but I love the genesis, to be honest. Like, I really think the genesis of it is really important. And I think that's probably, obviously, I mean, you're super established now, again, all of the academia behind you and now a team, you know, of people underneath you. So obviously your practice is super healthy and you're affecting change positively all over the place. But it has to start somewhere, right? And the somewhere for you was, it seems like it was a little bit of a performance gap yourself, right? To recognize that, hey, there's something else out here that I'm probably not getting or understanding, or there's maybe more for me to utilize in different components. And I can relate to that in some aspects as well. But I want to get back to, like, that draft year is super interesting. I mean, like, as you put, even 0 points, you know, a lot of healthy scratches. It wasn't what you had designed on your goal chart, that's for sure. And it wasn't what you wanted. Like, where was that? If you can go back to 17-year-old Cassidy, like, how did you handle that? And what do you think was the biggest gap in your game at that point?
Yeah. So at that point, like, I'd played okay at junior A. Like, I was a fourth round pick in the O, and did okay at junior A, but I didn't dominate by any means. And then I was like, I was just so committed, and I was always a hard worker, and I was strong and fast. And I worked so hard in the offseason. I'm like, I'm going in, I'm going to make the team. I wrote down those goals, all this. And I actually was on the starting lineup for game one of the regular season. So it wasn't like I was a bad hockey player. So I'm like, obviously, but like, I'm not going to sit here and be like, I was the most talented by any means, but like, I had earned, like, I was in a good spot and I got opportunity in those first few games, but I didn't really have my mindset dialed in at the beginning. And I was just so obsessed with the external results. Like, I was just got to get points, you know, got to get drafted, like, need to, have to, should. And then a couple games go by, I'm holding the stick tighter. Now I'm like, I'm not getting points. I'm looking online after every game. Who's got points in the league? Where am I at with, like, doing all these unhealthy things that don't get me into a great mental state, which then makes things worse. And all of a sudden I'm like 5-6 games go by. Now my ice time is really starting to go down. And I'm like, oh, now if I don't get a point, I'm not even going to get played. And then all of a sudden it's like 15 games in. And I remember my coach comes up to me and goes, you've got no points in 15 games. Like, it's going to be hard to play you the rest of the year. I'm like, yeah, I get it. Like, like it's true. Like, and I'm like, but I'm like, I'm screwed. So now when I do play, I get like 2 minutes a night. We once drove from Toronto to Ottawa for our bus trip. I'm in the lineup. I'm like, all right, I'm going to make the most out of these minutes. Got no shifts. Just waiting there the whole game. Wait, like didn't even get a shift. And I was dressed. So definitely hard to get points when you don't get played. And the worst part, and then I'll highlight like kind of some of the strategies to overcome that. And I was dealing with it, obviously, but not overly that well. The worst part was actually when I went back home after the season. And so it wasn't the not getting drafted. It wasn't the no points and falling flat. The hardest part was I'm in my hometown, which is a smaller hometown, North Bay, Ontario, like 50,000. So I'm the only guy playing the OHL at this time. And so like kind of a big deal relative to in a small community and to a degree. And somebody has the nerve, though, to come up to me and goes like, well, if I played 30 some games in the OHL, I would have got a point. I was like, oh, like just the embarrassment and the, oh man, like that hurt. Like, you know, like screw that. Like it's, I really considered quitting. Like I was like maybe I just shouldn't play. Like I can't deal with this kind of embarrassment. Like let alone the whole year was challenging. But I was like, well, I'm not going to let this define me. And I'm not going to let this be the reason I stopped playing. And I'll come back and make the most out of it, see what happens. The next year I went up and down actually, which is probably should have done that year. I won a championship in the junior A level of like 5 rounds of playoffs in the OJ. Like it was really cool, fun year. Then yeah. Was a consistent OHL guy the next year. And then, so I got to play a little pro. So like I said, like I was able to overcome it, but it was just not letting it define me and making sure I embraced it and grew from it. And then, like I said, like where does grit come from? Where does resilience actually come from? It comes from doing hard things. Like if when you do hard things, that gives us a source of grit. Everything else in my life was a lot easier because I went through that. Now I work with some players in that, like I don't encourage anyone to have to go through that and get healthy scratch, watch everyone else go chase their dream while you're sitting in the sidelines watching from the stands. Like 48 times is a lot when you're 17, thought you were going to get the Canadian dream and now you have to watch. So I don't encourage that on anyone. And there's a lot of structural things in hockey that I would, you know, challenge at times because of that. But the point being, you know, when you face hard things, you can't escape it. Like you want to pursue high performance and do great things, you're going to face adversity. And when you do, if you can embrace it, see it for what it is and own it and move forward and write your own narrative, like you become so much, you know, stronger because of that. So, you know, just making the most out of it. So that's some of the unpacking of that year, which was, yeah. You know, it's quite the trying to make light of it because it was a heavy, heavy year.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, that first year, major junior, I mean, is generally one of the most defining moments of anybody's career. And I mean, that includes Hall of Famers, you mean, that I've had on my program, right? Like it's not an easy transition generally, right? You're away from home in a way that you've never been before. You're with an older group of players, you have a coach that you're trying to perform for. It's a tough league, by the way, too, right? Yeah. You know, like it's not easy. So there's all kinds of stuff going on. You're still going to school. I mean, you have to keep your academics up and the road trips. I mean, there is so much going on that, I mean, you and I aren't alone in describing that's a tough year, to the point of like a lot of guys have considered quitting, you know, to you talking, just ringing in my ear now is Shane Doan and Jerome McGinley, both guys that I had on the podcast and both Hall of Famers, or Shane will probably be a Hall of Famer. Jerome is, like almost quit Kamloops Blazers at 16 years old because of what they were going through. You mean not playing lots, healthy scratches didn't right. And that adversity, that grit piece, that deciding to move forward, was one of the kind of the, you know, really the galvanizing moments in their own character development, kind of. But the thing is like, as you've kind of alluded to, and even when I was talking to Jerome and Shane, it's like what I try and do at least is like to teach players to try and recognize that moment as the opportunity. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, isn't that like to just change the story that you're telling yourself, right? And definitely easier said than done, but I think perspective is everything. Like what is your take on that? Like if we can see it for maybe being a test of what we're about or who we are, and now we're kind of, you know, introducing those competitive juices that we all have as being hockey players, and maybe like rewire that. Do you find that to be something that can be valuable for players?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And that's, you know, that's the heart of dealing with tough stuff, right? Like that's the heart, like how we frame it. Are we running away from tough things or can we like embrace it and like get stronger? Like think of just like lifting weights to get, like you have to lift heavy weights to get strong. It's like, yeah. So it's, you know, how do we become mentally strong? We got to do hard things. Like we can't just do, oh, let's always just take the easy path. Like, is there an easy path to the NHL? Like, I don't think so. Like there's going to be some level of adversity along the way. And some of it's more obvious and public and some of it's, you know, behind the scenes. And whatever it is, the narrative we bring to it really matters. And a lot of times our like consumeristic society that's just wants like, oh, I want results now and I want it quick. And I want like that. It's like, we don't embrace and value like, actually, no, we got to take the slow, long road, value the little things in the process. And that's where actually how we grow. And let's take the long, hard road, you know, not overly in the sake, but like, we're not afraid of it. And I think that really matters when we're thinking about how do you get someone's mindset to shift instead of looking at this as like, oh, this is something that this sucks and it's so terrible. We can't frame it as all positive. You know, that's ridiculous. Like it's tough. But how can we frame it as like, well, we can grow from this and we can stay connected to the why we play in the first place. Like that's so fundamental. And this can be a source of grit and we can come out of this that much stronger because of it. And get more clarity on who they want to be, all this, develop character, leadership, develop maturity, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, can be the benefit, but you know, I don't, you know, I'm always kind of mindful of like players as they navigate this. It's like, well, don't just put yourself in really tough positions. Like, you know, one of probably it might even be harder in some ways is, the first year of college now, because I don't know if it's harder, but like, you know, D1 players, like they've got like 18 forwards. It's like a lot of these teams, like, it's just like, you just do like, you barely even get in the lineup, like, and they only have 30 some games they play. So it's like, you can't avoid some of this, but to a degree, it's like, you know, do you need to jump to that next level right away and be mindful of what that team and that culture is like, because you don't have to like go into it too quick and do it all the time. Like it's, yeah. You would be smart about the environment you're in, but you're going to get challenges and the narrative you bring to it, I think really matters.
Yeah, I mean, totally. I think that's way more than half the battle. I think is how we choose to view whatever that thing is, right? That event is, and you know, one of the questions I ask, and sounds like you probably do too, is like from a pragmatic standpoint, because sometimes like when we're dealing with mindset, we're not pragmatic at all. We're really not even understanding why we're thinking what we're thinking, right? So if we can peel off a few layers of that whole operating system, sometimes just a simple kind of pragmatic way of viewing it can be really profound for some players. And when we like talk about a healthy scratch or whatever, right? So there's lots of ways you can digest that, right? It can be the coach doesn't like me. I'm not a good enough player. Everyone's laughing at me. You know, this is embarrassing. Patrick Laine just went through it. One of the best players in the NHL just got benched. Maybe we should talk about him actually, how you would deal with him. But, you know, we can have that perspective, or we could have a perspective that this isn't what I wanted, but there might be something here for me to improve. Like whether it be my team effort. Maybe it's my attitude when I show up at practice the next day. Maybe it's my resiliency and showing that maybe I got to up my competitive spirit. Like, I don't know what those things are, but for the player, but there is a way that you can maybe look at that and be, well, there might be something here for me instead of this happening to me. And I think the more that we can get ourselves in that headspace, and me now as an adult too, exact same thing, right? Yeah. Like it's not just hockey players and obviously athletes, but it's like, how do we want to approach things in front of us that can sometimes be like the biggest difference maker. And I guess I talk too much there, because my point actually was the whole time was like, if we take that approach of like the victim mentality, I don't know like what you call it, or yeah. You know, that mindset approach, is it helping you?
Yeah.
Like that to me, that's the question. Is this helping you play better? So the story you're telling yourself, the feelings you're feeling right now, the action that you're taking, all these things, is it helping you to get drafted or to be a better player, to get yourself back in the lineup? Yeah. And sometimes if a player just looks at me and says, not at all, right? Well, so what's the option, right? Is there a better option? And there is, right? So let's change the story and let's change your actions so you get better results for you, right? Because we're not serving yourself. So anyways, that's kind of a long way around being the pragmatic question, but this doesn't help high performance when you're thinking those things.
Yeah, 100%. And two things I'll spin off that. One was the coach doesn't like me. There's always such a common one. I'm like, pragmatically, like, coaches probably actually don't wake up and be like, no, I don't like Jason today. I'm not going to play. I'm like, I'm just going to screw with Jason. It's not really what they wake up thinking. So like, we kind of build these narratives that aren't even true anyways. And then the other way that I really like to think of like the narrative work is to think of like, who are we? Like, who am I? Like, who are you? Like, who is a person? And we can frame ourselves often as like a character in a story, right? And we're all on the story. And there's all these pages that are already written with facts. But are we the character? Are we the story? The best way to really make sure we understand and look at it is we're the author and the narrator of the story that we're writing. And we get to narrate the facts, right? Two people can have very similar facts, but how they narrate them matters. And like, oh, interpret what's already happened. And then how much do we own the character as a hero of the story versus a victim and things are happening to them? And most importantly, how do we write the next page? And so this is about awareness and choice, right? Who we are, we have this ability as humans to be aware of the stories and the narratives that are, you know, we're telling ourselves, and the choice to how we interpret the past and interpret who we want to be and how we show up and how we want to write the next page. And so it's a, and you talk about pragmatic way of like, is this serving us? Is this, you know, who are we and what story are we writing? And you're the author in there. And a lot of people, like, you get stuck in it, right? You're like in the story. It's like, no, let's step out of the story a little bit and look at it with a fresh perspective is a very helpful, effective way to get out of that victim mode and step into a one that serves you.
Gotcha. So that's actually a tool you would use with some of your clients.
Yeah, no, for sure. And we tap into that and we call it like the alter ego. And that's that Todd I mentioned, like the Black Mamba, like create a story and a narrative that clicks, very powerful. It's a simple way to use it. So, I can get more into that if you want, but it's a,
it's a super effective strategy for some people, sure. I mean, Danny Briere was current GM of the Flyers, a friend of mine and a guy I interviewed. He used it personally. I know Bo Jackson, but he was having a hard time. Danny said of like separating hockey player kind of gladiator Danny from like dad, husband playing with the kids Danny, right? And and so he ended up like, it was a little bit of a routine ritual that when he took off of his street clothes in the locker room to put on his other clothes, like that was almost like his unveiling or his Superman moment going into the telephone booth, right? That he would come out and now he's this different persona. I mean, it was still him. It wasn't like he was pretending to be somebody else, but he was allowing that piece of himself to really shine and to really come out. So I mean, it's definitely very practical and it's very effective for quite a few people. I wanted to have a question about the conflict or maybe lack of conflict, and just for you and your own personal practice. I find for myself personally that generally speaking, people will seek me out more when there is problem currently happening, right? That there is something that is of issue. They're not playing well enough. Confidence is low, blah, blah, blah. That seems to be like the majority. There still are some high performers that definitely want to find this edge. What is this all about? And maybe be able to add this to their toolbox type of system. But is that what you find too? That usually it's people that are in turmoil that are looking for help?
Yeah, pretty much. It's probably like 80%. It's like the pain threshold, right? Like what motivates people? It's often pain. Things aren't going your way versus like, well, I want to optimize things and get after it. It's even hard to probably put a number to it because there's a degree of that. There's like people like, we'll wait till it's rock bottom until they take action. It's like, it's a lot harder to pick up the pieces when it's down here. It could have been a little more proactive than that. And, you know, there's a few people that's like, hey, I know I'm going into a big year and I want to get ahead of this. I can feel the noise in my head already going in. There were some signs of it last year. Like I want to proactively get ahead. So, you know, but I would say the majority are more in between or in closer to the rock bottom, so to speak, where it's like, yeah, they need that. Like, and there's this like, I just someone give me an analogy of like the awareness mosquito. It's like all of a sudden it's like, I think the mental game is really important. It's like they like cross this chasm. It's like, yeah, mindset matters, the mental game matters. But like, I'm good. And then all of a sudden, like, oh, like, this is a thing I need to work on. It's like, at what point do you get bit by that awareness mosquito? And it's like, oh, I've got a scratch here and I can't deal with this. So it's, and I think like, that's why I love like the work you're doing in the podcast and the getting people more aware of it. And I think the tide is turning that it's more accepted and understood as like, this is not like, oh, you're broken and need to be fixed. Like that's never a helpful way to work on anything. It's instead, hey, this is another tool and area to work on, and coaching and advice and guidance that can help us grow as hockey players and athletes, but also people. And taking that approach is always a more healthy and effective way to anything you want to work on. And, but sometimes there's still like the dogma or the limiting beliefs that, no, this is a, you know, oh, I'm broken and fixed. It's only for people that are, you know, really struggling. It's like, no, like this is everybody. Like, it's like, you know, does working out optional? Like for high performers, like, no, they work out. Like it's, they go to the gym, they get feedback. Like, you know, what it looks like for each is a little bit different, but, you know, the framing around the mindset training in and of itself, I think it's evolving, but yeah, there's still a bit of a stigma and those kind of things around it. That's, I think it's mostly for the most part being broken, but it takes time.
Well, yeah, it's a slow roll. I think, you know, I mean, it's a slow build. Definitely, you know, the conversations are like ours are happening more often, for sure than they were. I think, I mean, but back to my original question though, would you trumpet the fact like one of the, I don't know, it's not my phrase, but you know, don't prepare for the storm in the storm.
Yeah. Like,
that's a tough way to do it. Right. You know, and yes, I mean, it does work. And obviously you've seen it. I've seen it. You can see there is some pretty profound breakthrough type events that can happen when somebody is low, right? Like sometimes it doesn't take much and all of a sudden, boom, like they're back and they find some fire or whatever the connection is that they need to make. And that is, that's really exciting. I mean, it makes me smile and it fires me up to do that. However, like, I love the approach that you're talking about there is like the people that get ahead of it, because if you want to be a hockey player, I promise you something bad is going to happen at some point. Like it's inevitable, right? Like, and like, if that's the first time you've dealt with it in this like massive, like really big time scenario, maybe you did have a smooth junior career. Maybe you did have a great, you know, journey through minor hockey. Maybe your first year of pro is great, but then all of a sudden now, whatever, new coach comes in, you get fired, you're in the pros and now you've gotten traded. Now you're in Columbus and you have no idea why you're there. And like, this is like the first thing. And now your career's on the line and you've never had to deal with it before. Like, that's not wise, you know? Yeah. So it's, I don't know. Like, I think we're talking the same language here, but like, I wish people would just be more proactive in their toolbox building.
Yeah. It's a failing to prepare is preparing to fail. I think that's John Wooden, I think, but it's, and think of it like, I always like the river approach, which is like downstream. Most people are like, they're in the stream, like you're in the thick of it. And they're like, kind of get them out of the water. Let's just stop falling in the river in the first place. Let's go upstream, be proactive, you know, work on it in advance. And to your point around like, you know, what's the cost of not being proactive? Like it can be pretty costly in a lot of ways around, it's a big season. And like all of a sudden, like, you're 10, 15 games in and things are sliding because a new adversity came up that you didn't, and you don't have the tool set to deal with it. And then now things are sliding. Now you get less playing time. So even if you go start fixing it mid-season, it's a big uphill battle to get back to where you want to be. And it might be too little too late. It's the draft year or it's a contract year. And then now you're, you know, at least you bounce back and recovered, but maybe not enough to get you the contract or the next team or the, you know, the draft, et cetera, that you wanted. And one of the other ways that I also even frame it is most guys are enjoying the journey, I would say, or hope, and like they enjoy the game. But one of the greater benefits, and to me the most important benefit to working on your mindset, isn't just it's going to help you perform better and play better and be more consistent, but you really stay connected to the love of the game and the enjoyment and the process, and the whole thing becomes more meaningful. And the why wait to get that benefit? Read the book, go to your stuff, like go look at this, all the available stuff online to at least be understanding and thinking about and spend a little bit of time, you know, to mentally prepare before and self-reflect after to get the constant growth and the impact. And you enjoy it more, let alone perform better. So, that's totally
good point. A lot of layers to the benefit. And I think and maybe the most important, maybe, I don't know if it is the most important. I know talking to a 17-year-old hockey player, it wouldn't be the most important, but like, it's you're a better human. You're more well-equipped. You're a better contributor. You know, there's so many life things that like, that are not the same as, you know, buying a new stick or going to power skating lessons, right? Yeah. That, you know, like those types of things that we know that we have to work on the physical skills. But I think that there is a personal development side of that, that I mean, really allows me to sleep really well at night, knowing that, you know what, if this kid doesn't make the NHL, like I know he's in a great spot. He's in a way better spot than he was before. I know the way he's thinking about himself and the credibility he's built with himself and his personal belief systems are different. And I mean, all those kind of things like are super powerful, right? Just in the context of going through this, this life of ours. So again, I don't say that very often to a player that's sitting in front of me, because they don't really give a rip. They want to play better hockey, and that's fine. I think it's awesome that we can use a sport that they're passionate about to speak about some of these tools, right? Because they want to get better. But I mean, to speak to the competitive parent or the competitive athlete out there, like, it is a massive competitive advantage in this day and age, pure and simple. Pure and simple. And it was back in my day, and you're a little younger than me, and it probably would have been in your day too, but not to the same context, I don't think, as it is right now. Like, the society's built different. The environment that we're raised in is different. The things parents do for us now is different. I think, like, there's so many differences in how we're wired mentally that we kind of need to be taught this stuff more than perhaps we did before. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I think it's with all of the stuff online and all the other influences, like, you know, having, you know, building and being intentional about how do you want to think and operate and what do you want your mindset to be. And to your point around the benefits, to a good story that just came last week, one of my old clients from like 5 years ago, you know, I was working with him, he was probably like 14, no, probably 15 or 16. Anyways, he's at college now playing baseball, but like, cause he was a dual athlete and he ended up going baseball, but he's like still using his reset routine. And I was just talking with the dad about it. He's like, and he goes, you know, out of all the money I spent on his hockey, like, it was like, this was the best money I ever spent. Like, it wasn't on the power skating or the skates or all the new stuff. Like, what's still having an impact on my kid's life? Like, it's, you know, working on his mindset and having those tools and having an outsider and having, you know, people that are doing the work day in, day out to be a resource for a son. So that was, you know, just a good testament to what you're saying. Like, the benefits are like, and not everyone's going to go to the NHL, but everyone can enjoy life and develop life skills and character and sleep better at night themselves even. So, I think that's huge.
Just going to take a short break from the conversation with Dr. Cassidy Preston to say thank you for listening and thank you for the reviews. I'm going to share a review now. I said that I will do that, especially when one comes in from Australia, of all places. I didn't even know that they played hockey in Australia. I didn't know that anyone would be listening to a hockey podcast in Australia. But one came in from Apple the other day, and it says, love the pod, 5 stars. Thanks, this is the best. Not like any usual hockey podcast. I love the mindset focus, and I find it extremely inspiring. Cheers from Australia with the peace sign. It's from BryFly43. Via Apple Podcasts. So love hearing that. Love hearing that the show has made it to a new continent in Australia and that you're enjoying it down there. And if you are somebody that is listening and hasn't reviewed yet, boy, that is a great way to say thank you. It's a great way to give back and really kind of do your part for Up My Hockey in a capacity of letting it grow and getting it out to new people. So thanks again from BryFly43. Glad you love the pod. I'm glad you find it inspiring and loving that the fact that a hockey podcast is being listened to down south in Australia. So let's get back to the conversation with Dr. Cassidy Preston. And I like your story too. I mean, I'll go back to sort of talking about I was always into psychology, like, for sure, like, always, philosophy as well. I mean, I was a reader, and that would be something I would do on the bus. And being a pro hockey player, you obviously has a lot of time to dive into stuff. So that was something that I was always aware of and definitely curious about and interested in. However, the idea when I was a pro hockey player of actually being in front of a sports psychologist at the time, especially the sports psychologists that were available to us at the time, which was generally somebody old and fat and gray haired and who had never done anything in the sports arena. Right. So as a pro, it was like, what am I like? There was just no connection, like, for me, like, you know, and plus it was also from that model of you had to feel really broken to raise your hand and say, hey, I need help. So, like, there was two barriers to entry there that just did not work for me. And I still see that now. Like, I mean, I'm sitting in front of you. You went to school for 12 years and you're doing amazing and totally respect your field. And you have the history of being a hockey player. I have no schooling, right? I have no formal schooling. Yeah. Yet I do feel that I'm getting great results with players, and I do feel that I'm helpful. And I do feel that I'm able to connect. And I think that's obviously because I played pro for 10 years and because I had this history and I've been in the rooms they've been in, and I have enough knowledge that I can help them, you know, move forward. How do you feel about that connection, like in the space and as far as like a place for somebody like me versus a place for someone like you, and how that all fits together?
Yeah, no, I think it's a great point. I think one of the things that I value a lot, and even with our coaches on our team here, is having elite athlete experience, whether it's hockey or other ones, because it's the ability to connect. Like and that's sometimes like a good example, like use a lot of the 16, 17 year olds or even younger and older. It's like the parents, and even if they did play at a high level, it's still like they're their parents. So it's hard to connect and get on the same level and be this third party. And so those are like the human skills of coaching, right? Just in general, like it's not, you know, there's counseling degrees. And one of the things as a side to your question, but like, because I'm not a clinical therapist or psychologist where I treat, you know, anxiety and depression. So, which I, you know, in general, I think serves me in the field that I'm in, because I'm not here to diagnose, you know, and treat. I'm here to coach. I'm a guide. And so I build a coaching relationship where they got to do the work to get the benefits. Like, it's not like, oh, well, just listen to me talk for half an hour. Like, no, like this is an interactive process, and you got to put in the work and you get the benefits and you embrace it. And the point that I'm like moving towards is just around, you know, not seeing it as like, when you think of like the therapy kind of contrast, it's like, oh, well, let's just hear your problems out. And it's like, you know, this very like clinical setting, like it's like, it gives the ick, like in some ways. So nothing that there's nothing wrong with the clinical setting, but it's like how to do it. And Phil Stutz, if you know him, he's at the documentary. He's got a great book called The Tools, and a documentary with Jonah Hill on Netflix. And so he's a clinical psychologist, and he talks about coaching people. He's like, a lot of people go to therapy and they want advice and they're paying for advice and they don't get it. And then they go out with their friends and they don't want advice and just want them to listen, and they get advice. And it's like, it's just so broken and backwards. And so even in the clinical therapy session, it's about connecting and be able to relate. Like, that's going to make someone really good there too. And so these are very much human skills that we can all develop. But yeah, when you've been in those shoes and you've been there, it gives us like more sense of ability to connect and trust. And then as long as you start to build that relationship and trust, and you give a bit of advice and you give some guidance and you do some things, and then they get some benefit, and then you build more trust and more momentum. So it's like, to me, like the education, like obviously I went to school for a long time, but it's like, is it the education that gives me the ability to get results with an athlete? I don't overvalue it, that's for sure. Like, I said, I didn't know what else to do. I'll go to school again. I was like, it was more kind of how that evolved. And give some of my origin, when I was like 18, I got my first job. Like, I've always had an entrepreneurial mindset. My parents are like, you got to get a job. Like, you can't just like play hockey and not work all summer. So one of my jobs, which was funny, I was a bouncer at like the Moose, it was called. Like, I wasn't that big or tough, but I was like big enough that I could be able to bouncer for a couple nights a week. And then I was like, well, I'll open a hockey school and a training center. It was actually not on ice. It was just workouts in my basement and shooting pucks in my buddy's garage. And then for local small town hockey players. And then we do a little bit of mindset training. We called it Complete Hockey Training. It was this cool little hockey school, and it's still running. My buddy actually runs it now. It's just more of an on ice thing, but it was the idea of like the full thing. I was like, I was coaching people. I was like 18. I was coaching like 15 year olds. I'm like, hey, think about your mindset. Like, I didn't know a lot then, but I knew something. Like, but it was like, so I've always been intrigued in like, and one of those guys is still playing pro, like Nick Hurd, this guy from North Bay, like great guy. Like, and you know, how much of an impact I have, I don't know. I hope something, but he was a great player anyways, but you know, we're still friends. And, you know, you don't need to be in like, and one of the things I'll do, and I'm going way off on some tangents here, you don't need to be like this to be your main thing. Like, anybody can be a support and challenge and help people grow. Like, one of my NCAA players, they're just like, well, how can I, like, I see a guy and he's in his own head and he's struggling. Like, how should I approach him? And I was like, well, like, empathy, like, and connect to them, like, share. And then like, if he's open to it, then you can start giving him, sharing some things that you've used. And it's like, what a great opportunity for him to be a better leader and have an impact. Like, not telling him to step outside of his role, but like, it's just the point being is like, you don't have to, you know, play in the NHL or go to 12 years of school to have an impact on others' lives. It's the ability to connect, humanize, and guide people. And then obviously you want to know what you're doing, but, so it's not like, it's like, oh, you're just making stuff up, but like there's some thought out things that work and you've in a track record. So, I think the connection human piece is huge to what we do.
I think, as you're speaking with that, I was thinking like, because you could, I'm not trivializing academia, but you mean like you could get some type of tool, like a reset tool or whatever off of YouTube, and I could know it, you could know it, my wife could know it, and we could all be equally versed in like how to explain it. But if the connection piece isn't there, and if the trust isn't there, right, and if the delivery isn't quite there, which is a tough, I don't know, like I assume that they don't probably teach that because it's hard to teach, like in the school, like that's kind of the magic, right? Like that's the golden goose right there. Either you kind of can do it or you can't, and not everyone's going to be like, I mean, not everybody's going to be your guy, and not everyone's going to be my guy, and not everyone's going to be somebody else's guy. I think the messenger really does matter, and it was actually kind of funny because when you're not funny, but ironic that the way some people think just when it comes to fixed mindset, growth mindset, that you requested to come on the podcast, you want to talk to your book, and like what this one buddy of mine was like, you can't have him on, he does what you do, you know, like why would you have him on? And I'm like, well, that's a really crazy way to think about it. I don't think that way at all. Like, I mean, I would love to have a conversation with Cassidy and see where he's at, and like I don't feel threatened by you, I'm sure you don't feel threatened by me, and I think just the discussion is worthy of having and having it. And also if I expose you to somebody that's listened to me and like they won't come to me but they want to go to you, then we've done our job. You know what I mean? To me, that's the underlying idea of what we're trying to do with this podcast, is just get people the help that they want, whether it's from me, you, whoever, right?
For sure. And I think it's, you know, very common thing, you know, the fixed growth mindset piece is, so like most people get it, have heard about it, but there's getting it and then there's living it, and those aren't always the same thing. And that's where I really encourage, you know, people, it's like, you know, the self-reflect and be like, okay, well, how can I get, you know, live it and have the alignment in the thoughts, feelings, and actions, and the self-reflection, the different things that might go into that. But it's, and that's why I love having conversations like this, is like, there is a lot of people with similar values and alignment. And the more that we connect and collaborate, then it's like the snowballs, and it's, you know, it creates, win-win relationships and impact. And then it's not like, you know, let's hold all our cards tight all this is some special thing. And it's like, then it actually hurts more people and we have less impact. Like it's about getting out there and sharing ideas and concepts and collaborating with other people, which is great, which is why I've built a team. And like, you know, it's like, I'm like, oh, like, here's your opportunity. You build your career. Like, and I'll, you know, and some people really run with it and it's great.
You have a lot of people underneath. How many people do you have underneath you now? Like I was looking at you.
I lose the count, but it's like 14 of us or so, give or take. So not all of them are full time. Like there's a bunch of them are full time, like are close to it. And some of them are kind of still in school or, you know, have other jobs. So they're part time. But, we've got a good range. We hired like 3 new like mental performance consultants, like out of like their grad school this past year, because we were growing and things. So and we only offer one-on-one, right? So that's one of the approaches we've generally started to take, because like versus where I love what you're doing with the group thing. Like I tried to do the group thing and then I was doing group and one-on-one and it got real messy. So then we just stopped doing the group things. I think the group thing is so powerful, and it's something, you know, maybe, well, this will be a discussion maybe off air we can have later about like, you know, encouraging that. Cause I think it's great to be in a community where you can hear other people's stories and stuff, and you're not in this alone. Like I think that's so powerful. So
I love that aspect of it. Yeah. I really do. And it is, whether it's my inner circle, I call it. So it's like a bunch of guys that have taken my program and then want to continue on. And so we have this every 2 weeks we get together. Like it lights me up, those calls, because of the value they get from each other, right? Like they want to listen, and maybe not everybody's in a need for coaching mode, they're in a celebratory mode. So you get to hear the good stuff while somebody else is maybe going through something else, and somebody's in major junior and you got a U13 player there that's just, you know, looking up to these players, and you can kind of flip the switch and allow them to answer some questions and give some insight. Like it's such a really cool space. And then once, once you all know the language too, right, as a group, and once you sort of have the foundation, like it's a whole different kind of energy that's in there. So it is really fun. I like working with teams too. But I have a question for you, just a little bit off topic, but I'm sure this won't bore my listeners. I had a sports psychologist, relatively, I don't know, famous is the wrong word, but reputable in the sport. And he bought my program a week or two ago.
Nice.
Never reached out to me, right? Like just bought it, the solo mission, and like didn't like hide it though either. Like used his email and everything else. Yeah. And I just kind of like, again, going back to the growth fixed mindset, I was like, I always try and be neutral or positive. And I'm like, I'm just wondering what the motivation of that would be. Like how would you take that on a personal level?
Yeah, I don't... I think, one, it's flattering. He's interested. So that would say, I probably would have emailed you and asked for some stuff first and coffee over paying it. But that would have been my approach. Maybe I'll save myself some money. I think it's, I spent a long time reading from all kinds of other people. And I work with Todd Herman all the time now. Like he's my mentor and ask him questions and developing a business and all that stuff. But some people are just, maybe they're hiding a little bit more. They're not as out there and like, hey, let's reach out. Like it can be awkward for some people to reach out. Like it's like, I'm not overly like some extrinsic person that, extrovert that just like loves to socialize all the time and talk to people. Like, I'm kind of, I like my quiet time, like just, I understand the value and appreciate and have to sometimes push my comfort zone a bit to reach out and send an email or a message to someone like, hey, I've got a book coming out. Like no point in writing a book. Nobody knows about it. I push my comfort zone a bit and do those things. So I think everybody's got some different paradigms, but it kind of alludes to maybe where they're at with their mindset and in their careers. And, I think a lot of people are avid learners too, right? So they're just, hey, I want to digest what this guy's, creating.
Yeah, and it's those conversations that you have. And I'm fascinated by the way people like what the story that is to somebody, right? And there are some people that were like really, whatever the right word is, maybe even shocked or, oh, he's going to steal your stuff. And I'm like, and for me, I was like, I had to think about it a little bit, but I'm like, one, I was like, this is actually kind of flattering. I think that he knows who I am and that he wants, to look at what I'm doing. But then there's also like that comfort in the fact of, I'm not doing anything special other than connecting. Like and that's the messenger, right? Like he can't duplicate me. So, you can take my stuff or try and do the same type of program. I wish him the best, right? But he's not me and I'm not him. And I'm comfortable in that space of like, whatever, which allows me not to have anxiety, which allows me not to be protective and, anyways, feel like this is some poison dart. So I don't know. I try and find in my own life when I am kind of utilizing some of these things that I teach, right? Like there is a different way you can tell that story that makes sense, right? Like it still makes as much sense as something else. And this one actually allows me to sit in front of you and talk about it and feel good about it, It's okay.
Exactly. And I think it's like, intellectual property is such a big thing, but like, it's like, that's not the magic. Like you said, it's not just like the systems and the processes or the strategies. It's actually doing the work and connecting and your story. Like no one can replicate that. And because I've done the same, like with mine, it's like, I'll put stuff online or I'll put this on in the book. And it's like, but the real, no one can be me. That makes sense. You can't I can't be you and so forth. And so, and I think there's nothing wrong with like giving credit where credit's due. Gets it on a great idea. Like if you give me a great idea, I'll be like, let's talk to some athlete. What Jason said to me? It's like, I'll just give credit, just not steal it and not give credit. Like that's not right. Exactly. But and people like that. Like that's why I credit Todd a lot. I credit, John DeMartini and lots of other people that I've learned from. And then I've innovated obviously lots of stuff myself, but it's about getting it out there and helping people there's a community of us. So it's not, there's a lot of people playing a lot of sports, let alone the whole working force, which I'm doing more and more, work in that world and, with executives or surgeons and investors and that kind of stuff. Like they deal with similar stuff. Like there's the pressure, the expectations, the mindset matters for them too. So.
Yeah, for sure. I wrote down on my notes that earlier when you were talking just kind of about the, the different, the therapy and the different facets of support that are out there. Just want to hear your thoughts on it. Like the one way that I try and describe what I do is in that bucket of mental fitness, and as mm-hmm. opposed to mental health. And I may be completely off on how I deem them, but like mental health to me seems that's a discussion generally about depression. At the end mm-hmm. of the day, it also seems to be like maybe the kids that, you know, are having suicidal thoughts or tendencies, and like that it's okay to talk and get support. Like, and that conversation matters 100%. The support needs to be there. But I do feel that it's more on the clinical spectrum than not. And as far as if we're going to look at this, like kind of on a spectrum, right?
Yeah.
Yet what I do, I think it's more mental fitness. Like I'm trying to prepare athletes so they don't have mental health issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Does that make sense? Like, am I wording that properly? Is that the way how you would kind of describe how you help as well?
Yeah. I like to put it on a continuum. And it's hard to like overly conceptualize it, but there's this continuum where, you know, there's like mental health and mental fitness or mental performance are all these two sides, and they kind of overlap a little bit. And the first thing to make very aware of, there's at some point, and it's kind of somewhat, it's been created somewhat arbitrary in the sense of like, oh, it's like how much feelings of anxiety and to what degree and the severity of it is what then they get diagnosed as depression, anxiety. So, but there is a fine line. And then obviously if you're not in the clinical, like myself as well, we can't touch this side of the line. Does that make sense? Like we're not allowed to touch, meaning like we're not allowed to say we can treat, diagnose and treat these anxiety and depression. And the kind of way that I often frame it is like that clinical side is like going from like kind of bad or tough spot to good. Whereas we're working often going from good to great. But they're on the same continuum. And like you said, it's often a proactive way to do it. It's like, but it's in the same thing. And a lot of the concepts are the same. It's just formally like it was this red flag. We cannot say that. Like, oh yeah. Or you're feeling really sad that, oh yeah, we're the solution. Like, no, we can't, we're not allowed to ethically do that. And so we don't, but yeah, I would say they're on this continuum. And so, you know, how we label and identify it, you know, matters. And, you know, whether it's mental performance or mental fitness, I think that's a great way to shift the narrative and proactively do it. But even like things like, that are mental health initiatives, like can sometimes that creates it like too much of a, like, oh, well, you either have a mental health problem or you don't. It's like,
right.
We all have like a mindset and we all get sad and anxious as to what degree and severity. And we could all work and lean on having a support team and working on our mindset and working on dealing with our thoughts and feelings and the narratives we tell ourselves. Like this is not, well, wait till you're, oh yeah, you know, reach out if you have mental health. Like it's okay to have a mental health challenge. And it's like, of course it's okay. But we got to be careful about then labeling that, because then you start to identify and label as like, oh, like, and then it continues the stigma almost. So, but I can't speak too much to that, 'cause that's not my main thing, but it's when you're talking about it, like they're much more connected than not, but it is good to kind of stay in our lane and not, not pretend to be professionals in the area we're not,
I'll stay a million miles away from that aspect, but I do think it's important to discuss the distinction, you know, and like you said, it is a gray distinction, but mm-hmm. I do find, and I think when you're probably in front of athletes, as I am, the stuff that's out there that's kind of been approved by Hockey Canada or like by the major organizations is generally around like the mental health aspect, I find, right? And again, I'm not denouncing it. It needs to be there. It needs to be talked about. These players need to have support, and it saved a lot of lives. Like, I mean, 100%. But when you're speaking to a broad audience of like a league or a hockey team, you might be speaking to one kid.
Or
a handful of kids. So what happens to the other kids? They all tune out because they haven't reached that delineation point, right? And they don't feel like they're talking to them. And whereas where I think you feel like where what we do or I do is like, I feel like I'm talking to like the vast majority, if not everybody, right? So everyone has a piece in that puzzle. And I think that's where the proactiveness, I think, of associations and you know, like entities like Hockey Canada need to get on that side of the fence of like, okay, we need to help like, as you said, like the far down the line, but what are we doing for everybody else to help them not get there?
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's often like the approach in hockey is like, we're checking the box. We're covering our ass, so to speak. Like, it's like, not like we need to be proactive. Like, what's going to actually have an impact and shift the culture and shift mindsets and help people enjoy the game and be, you know, create a healthier experience and all these other things. Like, it's, you know, not just check a box to just say we had a, you know, thing and then we don't do anything about it. Like, so it's, you know, there's a lot to be done at the higher levels, I think, in hockey and other sports too. It's not just a hockey thing, but it's, you know, we'll see. I've got some different things like with organizations that I've chatted with, but I've generally had a hard time. Like, it's like people don't want to change. Like, I mean, yeah, they're stuck in their ways. It's the old boys club, those kind of things. Like, it's, we made a podcast and I did this big write-up last March, caused a little shit, where I called it like, is hockey broken? I'm like, yeah, it's broken. I was like, I just went on a rant about, because I'm just tired of seeing the things that I'm seeing. So I went on this rant, and it's not just a hockey thing, it's a lot of sports things. But so it's not just hockey, it's a lot of sports are broken, and a lot of leaders at the higher levels could, you know, I want them to step up and take more accountability to do something different. Like, you know, you're not going to change the system and the structures and the, you know, the policies and the, you know, what support you're providing athletes and the way that the role that rolls up. Like, well, how do you expect things to change? So, so anyways, I go on a way tangent on that, but
well, I like the way you talked about that though. Like the box checking, like I totally agree with that. It's like something that they think they're supposed to do. And it's also with like the least ideation around like, how's this going to actually help, you know? And it sounds like what you're doing, like you're very action oriented, as am I. Like, I don't want to go honestly in front of a group of players for a 30-minute workshop and then leave, because guess what? Yeah. Nothing happens.
Yeah.
Right. Like, they talk about it for 10 minutes, then nothing happens. Like, you have to have some substance to what is going on, which is why I like the longer term things. And I like, you know, the working with players so that they're actually taking action in their own life. And until that happens, you know, it's just window dressing, right? So anyways, I think when organizations, associations, teams are like, yes, I want to provide real support that is going to make effective change to the culture and to the players, now you're onto something, right? And whether that's me or you or somebody, but that should be like what that genesis is. Like, how do we actually make a difference, right?
Yeah, no, for sure.
So I want to take another short break from the conversation with Dr. Cassidy Preston to let you know about what's going on at Up My Hockey. As this podcast is being released, we are approaching or will have passed American Thanksgiving. And there's, you know, the specials that are online. I don't do specials. What I do though is provide scholarships. And that is something that I haven't really talked about on here much, because I'm not sure. I think that the financial aspect of support is relevant. I know hockey is relevant, as far as financially relevant in a lot of people's lives. I know how much money we are spending this year on the three boys that we have playing competitive hockey. And it's not a small check size. And when it comes to getting support for your athlete to be their best, there is a little bit of a, I don't know, there's a game of ping pong that I kind of play with that back and forth, that yes, this is my business. And yes, I do know how valuable the service is. And I do know how it can impact an athlete, not only on the ice, but also just personally as a human being. And I know there's value to that. And I know that that requires an amount of money to be invested. And I do believe that the prices are worthy. However, in saying that, I think that it should not be something that you can only have access to if you have X amount of money, you know, a lot of money or whatever the case may be, as far as you fill in that financial blank. So something that I do with my programs here locally, something that I do quietly online, is that when I get on to a call with somebody, and if the financial burden is a legitimate burden, sometimes we need to get out of our own way when it comes to that. There is a limiting belief around money sometimes, but if there actually is like a scenario where somebody can't afford the service, I work with them on whatever that is. I believe that the athlete should be able to get support. I believe the athlete should be able to make the most of their potential and play the game with a smile on their face and play with confidence. So in this moment of Thanksgiving, And I guess to give thanks, I thought that I would just make that a little more public, that I do offer scholarships, whether it be locally or whether it be across North America to families that that otherwise wouldn't be able to afford it, but would want to get the service. So if that is something that you're interested in, there is the Peak Potential Mindset Audit that I do have online in my Facebook group, Up My Hockey parent group, that's called. I believe it is also on my website that you can fill that out as far as to see where your athlete is at. And if you are considering the idea of mental fitness training, mindset training, and you can fill that out. And if a scholarship is something that you think that you would like to apply for or be worthy of, then I would be happy to consider that and get on a phone call with you and get your athlete moving. So hockey has given me, geez, pretty much everything of value and worth in my life when it comes to my experiences and, you know, who I am today and why I do what I do, and even how we live in this house. It's all from hockey, and I respect that, and I'm very grateful for that, and I try and find opportunities to honor that, you know, whether it be by, you know, supporting the growth of upstanding young boy and girl hockey players to be the most that they can be on the ice and off the ice in the community, whether that be by giving back, you know, equipment that we've used and instead of selling it, to try and provide it to families that could use it, or to the association, or to volunteer within the sport. There's lots of ways where we try to honor what hockey has meant to the Podolin family, and this is another one of those ways. So thank you, hockey. Thank you, those who are listening. Thank you to those who have supported Up My Hockey in one way or another, from a financial side. And if you've supported it just from an audible side by listening to the podcast, I mean, it all matters, and I am appreciative. So yes, in honor of Thanksgiving, I just wanted to let you guys know that school scholarships are available. So let's get back to the conversation with Dr. Cassidy Preston.
And
maybe that's a great segue actually to your book, because I know, like, there's lots of ways to affect change. There's lots of ways to do that. Getting knowledge out there and allowing somebody to have this database or this guidebook to be able to, you know, plug in play for their own life is totally one of those things that is great that's available. So give me the backstory. Obviously you've been doing this for a long time. You were in school for a long time. This seems like it would probably be a long time coming for you. It must've been an idea you've had for quite some time now.
Yeah, I've had lots of opinions, and I'm wanting to share them, I guess, for a while. But so obviously my playing experience, and then I went to school, and then learning from all the other people, and then there's been this constant innovation, applying it, seeing what works, refining it, and then eventually about a year ago, I was like, okay, it's time to put something together. Like, let's write it. And there was the idea of like a mini micro book. Was like, yeah, let's just make it small, get a first thing. And then it's not big. It's like 150 pages, like small. It's a smaller size book too. So it's a pretty easy, quick read. And so it's meant to be compact, but very actionable and practical for hockey players, but other sports too. But mostly it's written for hockey, and all the examples are hockey in this one. And the idea and the big idea of it was, we call it mindset first, because most people, and one of the biggest mistakes that I find, I'm sure you find as well, is that people are so results oriented. They're so consumed and obsessed about the results first. And this be do have model I like to use as an example is like, well, they focus on the results first, and then they'll focus on what do I got to do to get the results? And the last thing they think about is, well, what do I want my mindset to be? How do I want to show up? Why am I playing in the first place? And as long as that's the order, results, and then process, and then mindset, the mindset suffers. If the mindset suffers, everything else starts to suffer, and it creates this downward spiral. And a lot of players oscillate. So what we want to do, and the reality is that's backwards. The way it works is focus on who you're going to be, mindset first. How do I want to show up? Then that leads to what are you going to do? And it finalizes in the outcome of the results. And so you can have the goals and intention for the results, but they're not the priority. And one of the mistakes and the common thing, and I'm sure you've heard it, and it's a hard separation, is there's this paradox here. It's like, okay, yeah, I get it. I want to focus on my mindset, because if I focus on my mindset, it'll lead and flow to better, you know, mental state, and leads to these better results. So it's like, I want to have a mindset to improve results. I want to focus on the process so I get better results, which means what? We're prioritizing the results still. And I actually want people to really, truly make the flip. You can still care about the results. It's not to care less, but you're actually prioritizing who do I want to be and how do I want to show up, staying connected to the love of the game, your mindset first, right, as the priority. And when they truly do that, then, and they've got clarity in that, then everything else flows. And the actions and the mental state and leads to not guaranteed results, but the probability goes up. And like I was alluding to earlier, more importantly, you enjoy the journey, which helps you play better too. So that's kind of like the underlying premise. That's the whole like first chapters, breaking that down and some of the ways to think differently, like challenging the status quo, things like acceptance and commitment being centered and, you know, breaking down enjoyment and separating our why we play from the goals and the results. So that's like the fundamental base. And then the through line throughout is like, okay, well, how do we actually apply that? Because sometimes it's common sense, but not common practice. And it's easy to get sucked in to the allure of results. And so then we talk about confidence and the alter ego, and we deal with the fear of mistakes and the reset routine, and all these other strategies are intertwined in the book and a lot of these big concepts. So that's the main premise. Happy to dive into more of it, but yeah, it's kind of like, you know, what fires me up for sure. So.
Yeah, cool. Well, who, so a year to write, is that what you said?
Yeah, about that. Like, well, I've been, you know, doing a lot of this stuff in the back, but like formally since I decided to do it, it was about a year ago now. So really kind of worked on it in the start of the new year of this year, and then really got after it come like March, April, wrote most of it. And then it's been like editing since probably May or June and refining, and that was a process. So the funny one is like recording the audiobook. Oh my gosh, that was hard. That was last week. So, I was like, I could make a mistake. I can't read my own writing. It was pretty funny.
So,
that is funny.
So from, I mean, sometimes people write books as a labor of love. You know, I mean, there's an idea that they want to share. You know, it sounds like that's intertwined in what you're doing. You also mentioned you're an entrepreneur. So like this, and I've heard multiple times, you don't make any money off of books. You know, don't write a book if you want to make money. Yeah. But there can be outline, you know, advantage to that. Like maybe you get more booking, speaking appearances. Maybe, I mean, I don't know, maybe there's some type of a trail system in your one-on-one coaching. What was the underarching motivation for the book itself?
Yeah. So for sure, the first thing was just to get it out there and to get the ideas. And cause you know, I mostly just do high ticket one-on-one coaching is kind of our thing. And like, and we have a range of coaches with lower rates too. So that's great. But so not everyone's as expensive, you know, relative, but the point being it's, you can only like one athlete at a time. And I was like, okay, well, what's a leverage? The best, easiest leverage next play is a book. And then there's other reciprocal benefits out of that can feed, you know, more people might come back or lead to more speaking opportunities. And nonetheless, I just, you know, with where I was like, cause like, I probably wanted to write it like 3 years ago. I was like, oh, it'd be great. I got all these ideas. Like I wasn't probably where I was at needed to write a book yet. Like from like, I didn't have as many reps as, and now that I've been out of school and like, this is like 20 plus years of experience between playing, being a coach and a practitioner, as well as my education. Like it's been a long time coming. So I felt it was the time to get the first one out there, and that maybe there'll be more, you know, additions right. or deeper ones, but we'll see. We'll start with one.
Isn't that interesting? Like I hear a touch of, I don't know what the right terminology is, but like that you have to have the belief in yourself in order to write the darn thing in the first place, right? Like that I need to have my reps and I need to feel credible in my own skin. I hear that. I mean, one, that's a human thing for sure. And we respond to everything, but obviously the hockey players too, you step up into a new league, you step up into a new team. Like, do I belong here? Am I supposed to be here? Like that whole kind of self-worth thing. How much of that role did that play for you? And was there any tools that you used yourself to overcome them?
Using tons of tools on myself, just write the book. Doing that, like I did the audio recording last week, was a ton of tools. I can't believe I can't, like, I can't say a certain word. Like, you mess up one word, now I gotta restart. And I'm overthinking. But so I was using some tools last week. I remember like just getting into it, like back in like May, April, and like even just part of the process, I was in like a speaking course actually at the same time as I was writing, so which was helpful and just. Is like clarifying ideas, right? And having a like the big idea throughout or the main thing around mindset first throughout. And then applying that to myself. Like it's like part of it's like cathartic and just like, you know, half the stuff that I coach people is just make to remind myself to have this mindset and to be mindset first. And like one of the first I remember things, it was in March or April, and I might have made a video or I made a blog post being like, You know, even while I'm writing this book, I need to be mindset first. Like, why am I doing it? Who do I want to be? And it's not like I got to let go of whether, like, you know, is it 100 copies sell or, you know, 10,000 or more, like who knows, but like, I know why I'm doing it. And so, and the result's going to be the result based on how well it's written, how the feedback is, how well it gets marketed, all this other stuff. And so try to surround myself with a good team, but being able to detach from the results and just like, well, just enjoy the process. It's meaningful. I know why I'm doing it from an intrinsic reason and to impact. If I can impact two people's mind, like, that's great. Like, a lot of work to impact too, but hopefully it's more, but like, yeah, that's the goal. And you know, there's a range of results and I can accept and let go of the range and just focus on doing the best product and process that I can. So that was one. And the audiobook part was another. And then now actually, I'll give this as a funny, you know, example. It's like as the launch now comes, like it's happening now, like in the next coming weeks here, and it'll be officially available. And I got my new personal website will be is launching this week. Where it's like this, it's a bit of a feeling like, well, how's this going to go? Like, it's because I kind of dealt with it back then. And I was like, all right, well, I don't have to worry about how it's going to go. I got a lot of time until it's going to get launched. Well, that was about to go live. And I gave this analogy. I was reflecting, like, I'm like an artist, like a painter, and I've been selling paint one-on-one. Okay. You want to want an art paint, like bang, do a good job, sell some paint, like one-on-one paint. And then now all of a sudden I've been working for like a year, let alone longer, but a year of like strategically creating an open gallery. And I'm going to have all my paint up there, like, right. And it's like, and anybody can come and look at it and criticize it and say whatever. Like, I was like, and is anybody even going to show up? It's like, and it's about to launch next week. It's like, I was like, oh man, like this is different. Like, so it was like, it was kind of a good analogy for that thing. I'm like, all right, it's okay. It's about the ideas and it's going to be what's going to be again. So it was another kind of processing of my own mindset. So for sure, there's all this, it was no slight undertaking by any means.
Well, good for you. Congratulations. I know that's not a small project by any stretch of the imagination. So yeah, great that you got it out there and you followed through. who is it for? Like, if, I mean, I guess that would be the idea too. You said to get it out there. You mean, if you're writing it, speaking to a 15-year-old, it's probably written a little different than you would speaking to the adult of that 15-year-old, that parent. Yeah. Did you think about what voice you were speaking in and who you were speaking to?
Yeah. So like the primary, like it's a hockey player more than the parent. There's a little section in there about the parents in like chapter 8. And so, and then it's written still for the player. And it says, if your parents like this, get them to read the chapters, is what it says. But, and the parents should read the whole book too. But, so it's written to the player, and you know, the probably ideal reader is, you know, 13, you know, but then definitely 15, 16, 17, those guys going through junior, obviously pros as well. There's not many of them, but there's still lots of pros in the world. And, you know, people maybe younger, maybe if they're mature enough and want to read, but you know, I'm not sure. I try to keep the reading level pretty low because I'm actually, you know, I have a PhD, but I'm not that good at reading and writing. So that's probably low just out of necessity. So always trips me. I write and I miss words. Don't know complicated words. Anyway, it's kind of funny. But so it's probably, hopefully, you know, we try to keep things as simple as can and want to be concise and practical. So certainly some younger players can read it, but they got to want to read and be at that age level where they have the maturity to do it. But even the parents of like a 10-year-old might read it and get a lot of benefit out of it too. So it's an easy way to introduce. But yeah, it's written more for the player, and the probably the biggest range that's going to be the most impact will be that 14, 15, the people going into those bigger years and then going through the junior and starting pro and getting into the pro level. So
Yeah, I found that with my I really only have one program out there right now called the Peak Potential, and I did it I think maybe 3 summers ago now, I thought I was speaking to junior players, like when I was doing it, that's who I thought it would be ideal for, and it's just it kind of crazy to me that, you know, the 11-year-old or the 13-year-old really benefits from it, you know, and yet there is some concepts and maybe the way I would speak, I'm trying to in the process of like if I ever find enough time to do, you know, a different age variation kind of, and maybe a Peak Potential 2.0. But that's one of the things that parents ask me all the time, especially when it comes to this stuff, is, well, when is the right age or the perfect age, right? Because now, you know, like they want to start, but they don't want to start too soon. They, you know, and there's an investment side to this, of course, that they have to be financially responsible. And And I don't have really have a great answer for that, because it's like, I don't know what your 10-year-old is going to get or not. I mean, I do think that the sweet spot is like, and at least in the hockey world, is that second year peewee, like U13 going to U15, or maybe your first year U15. So like you're a 14-year-old, because one, like life is happening, right? You're like elementary to high school, hormones are happening. Like there's that whole transitionary thing where you're kind of figuring out who you are. And then hockey really changes at that age. Like, and you're kind of getting more committed, probably, you know, like more of this ideation of, yeah, I want to get somewhere. So I kind of say like that's maybe the sweet spot, but like, is it not worthy of a 10-year-old to do it? Like I say, it's probably better to do it yesterday if you can afford it, like do it. But I don't know. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah. I always stress the sooner you start, the sooner the better. Like it's and I frame it this way. So maturity matters, probably the biggest thing. Like you could have a 12-year-old be more mature than a 14-year-old and might get more out of it. Generally, there's more mature 14-year-olds than 12. It makes sense. But there's, you know, but you can get some 10-year-olds that are super mature. We've had like 10-year-olds come in. They're like, you know, they're like acting like they're 17. Like, you know what I mean? Like, this, like that person's going to get a lot out of it really quick. Now, So an 8-year-old, 9-year-old, 10-year-old, 11-year-old might not get as much out of doing the work, reading the book, doing your course, etc., your program, as the 15-year-old, but now they've got years of the benefit. Like, why would you wait to get the benefit? Like, and then what happens? Okay. Well, he's got an okay mindset now. We might want to work on it. And he's 10. Well, no, wait, we'll wait till he's 15. Well, now you've got 5 years of dogma and problems that have arisen that now you've got to, you know, clear and deal with, and, you know, wiring in the brain to override, versus when they're 10, they're so malleable. Like, you know what I mean? Like, again, so the benefit might be slower, but the longer impact, I think, is worth it. So it's, if they're considering it at all, I would just do it if they can afford it. And the timing feels reasonable and they feel the maturity and the kids, you know, willing to buy in. But I think, I like to frame it that way. Is I'm like, yeah, it might be slower. And like the way we do it when we work like one-on-one with like a younger population, like 12 and under, we almost we've updated and we've mandated. It's like most of the time, if not half the time, is with the parent, like just one-on-one with the parent. Like we're just coach the parent how to coach the kid, like, or talk to the parent like how to talk to the kid differently, make sure, because to be self-driven enough at those younger ages, and half the time the parents are unintentionally saying the wrong things and making half the problems anyways. So yeah, they mean well, they're not trying to say the wrong thing, but they are, the should, have to, need to, but, you know, the car ride home's not done well. Like those things are a big source of the challenge. So like, we'll have like a 9-year-old come in. Like I don't work with that young anymore, but, and they'll be like, the majority of the program will be at the parent because they're 9, like, but like, it's still very beneficial for that 9-year-old to, like, why wait to learn and think differently and develop a mindset that serves them and enjoy? Like, these are great life skills, like we've alluded to, you know, near the beginning. So, yeah, I frame it that way. The other thing I'll touch on, which goes back to the beginning, I alluded to it a bit, like the idea of maturing. So, like, what you're doing, what we do is, you know, another way of looking at it from a real outside way is, like, we're just helping people mature. Like you're just helping people become more mature, and people will naturally mature. We're kind of just helping them naturally do it faster by guiding them and giving them different ways to think and tools and resources so that they can become just more mature people that can process and deal with the different, you know, challenges and adversities and pressures that come with life and distractions. And even when when I work with like a pro athlete and stuff, like it's, you know, they're still maturing and they're still like, there's just still lots of distractions. And sometimes half the discussions have nothing to do with hockey or the sport. It's to do with all the other external stuff going on in their life. And then the impact that has, because now they can show up in the mental state they want. And because other areas of their life are, you know, there's more clarity, like, you know, with the Briere example you were referring to, right? Like you needed clarity and, you know, compartmentalizing his mindset and his life, because it's all interconnected. So having that person, that external sounding board for that, can serve benefit in any area of life. So
Yeah. Would you say, would you make the distinction between, because I heard that word maturity, and in my head I was actually kind of giggling, because I know lots of adults who are fully physically mature, but maybe not that mature, you know? Could we safely say like emotional maturity or mental maturity, or like would there be a better distinctive word there?
Yeah. Just to be clear. Yeah. Emotional maturity. Yeah.
Yeah.
Emotional, their mindset. You know, I was doing this with a top basketball player this week with an injury. And it was a great example of like, and talk about the silver linings we talked about earlier, whether it's, you know, getting benched or not getting played well or healthy scratch or injuries is another common one. And he's like had a few injuries this year. He's a top, you know, recruit. And he's, we were just talking about like, well, maybe the silver lining here. And the one thing that we talked about, oh, I'm becoming more resilient. And we've talked about, you know, staying connected, working on his mindset, all these other benefits that he's had in these other, you know, minor injuries. And then I'm like, maybe the thing is maturity. And then the way we framed it was really nice. You know, thing that clicked for him. And I think it was a nice distinction. He was like, well, I can accept that I'm injured, but then he wasn't having the full alignment and the feeling. There was still this like immature kind of part of the voice in his head going like, yeah, I accept it, but it sucks. And he's like, you know, the body language changes, the tone. There's just a little bit of this undertone, and he wasn't fully mature. Right. And he's relatively mature for his age, but I'm like, I don't want to be relative. I don't want to be above average. I want to be 1%. I was like, and if you can, you know, really embrace this part of the injury and where you are in your story, that's going to help you, your maturity go to a whole nother level. And he's like, yeah, no, that makes sense. Like, and it's like the alignment in the feeling, like acceptance and commitment are feelings. And you have the full mental state and fully resonate with that feeling, or is there a bit of an undertone and a bit, oh, yeah, screw this. Yeah, I'm committed to making the most out of it. I'm committed to focus on what I can control. But this is stupid. not fully mature. Right. And that is so common for people 25 and younger, let alone 25 and older. So like, let alone for a 15-year-old or 17-year-old or 20-year-old. So again, it's just a different way of looking at the work we're doing is like that's emotional maturity to deal with these different and navigate through life. And that's incredibly valuable for performance, but let alone enjoyment and meaning and whatever you do in your next career, whether, you know, work with a hockey player and they don't quite make it, but then become a doctor or surgeon or investor, or become a parent one day or a coach, like, you know, how they're going to show up there. Those, the lessons they learn, you know, can have that ripple effect impact. So
in that story, you just provided the basketball player, like what would be a fully aligned, emotionally mature response? Like what would you, you know, if you were to celebrate him and how he's responding to that injury, what would that look like?
Yeah, great question. So I would go, we just use that 1-2 punch of the acceptance commitment, which is those core principles. One is first, he's like fully accepts. It's like, hey, yeah, I'm hurt. I'm injured. Like, this is not where I like to be. This could take some time. And, you know, and I can make something out of this, right? I'll make the most out of it. I just own where I am. And so there's no undertone, and you can feel it. Like you feel it. You look yourself in the mirror. You can't lie to yourself, right? You feel that you fully commit, like, you know, fully accepted in that state. So like that would be a good mature, full maturity and alignment. And then on the other side, on the commitment side, well, and if you fully accept, you'll be better at fully committing, right? So now that I fully accepted it, now I can like, well, I'm going to commit to make the most out of it. I'm going to commit to keep being mature. I'm going to commit to being a better teammate, commit to doing my rehab and these things. And now I'm fully committed versus I'm committed, but like, I'm going to drag my feet I'm committed. Like I'm grounded, I'm centered. So it's this feeling. It's hard to really verbalize, which is why I like, and he used actually the word, which was great. I wrote it down. I was like, you know, it's like, I got to kill the undertone. So I got to get rid of that undertone. There's no undertone to when I say something, I say acceptance or commitment. It's the feeling that I have alignment. I've got rid of the undertone. Now I'm grounded. I'm fully mature with my response. And so, and I get players too, and we do this in like the personal scorecard thing that we get players to do, athletes, is self-assess. So for him, it's like, hey, well, what are you at? And he was like, oh, I was at a 40% maturity. And then he went up to like 80. Like just in that conversation, I was like, we'll get to 90 now. We'll get to 90, 95 plus like range, not perfect, but, and we get players to do that. Like walking the line as a D. Well, where are you at right now? When you're walking the line, you know, are you in attack mode, confident, you know, have your swagger, deception, whatever the mental state is you want. oh, you're at 40. Okay, well, let's get it up. Like that awareness and then choice, and contrasting that with how you don't want to show up. And so, and then there's some things, and using the acceptance, commitment, use the alter ego, these different strategies, very pragmatic, practical ways to, I call it gamifying the mental game. So, and it's like, I know what I'm working on now. And then you can, and then what I want players, instead of obsessing about the results, I want you obsessing about your mindset. Like, cause it's like, oh, if I'm not going to obsess about that, what am I obsessing about? Like, it becomes this like paradox, because like people want to obsess, like they're high achievers, that they're motivated. And so we got to make it more tangible and gamify it. So.
Yeah, I know. I love that. I think anytime you're definitely speaking to a competitive athlete, when you can have it be some type of a scorecard, like that they can feel like they're winning or losing. You know, I think it's just easier for them to understand and grab onto and get excited about and engage. The acceptance. I love that concept, and it's funny. Like, that's why I love these conversations, because you go back to the Rolodex, or you think about different aspects of stuff that you've done yourself. And I think there's a massive distinction, like, between that acceptance versus resistance, is what came to my head, because, we use the healthy scratch scenario. Like, you can be really resistant to that happening, right? Like you didn't want that to happen. Why is it happening? Or I'm not in the power play, and there's a resistance there, and that resistance isn't serving you. But then when you accept it, it doesn't mean you have to like it. And that's the thing when I talk to players about, you do not have to like it, but you do need to accept it. And then from there, we can make, to your point, like, now there's a decision to be made from that spot, right? About how you want to show up. So I think that's like, for the listeners out there, like, understanding the difference between acceptance and resistance, and you do not have to enjoy it because you accept it. And that's a big game changer, I think.
Yeah. I harp on in the book too. Like, I think acceptance is a superpower, but our society generally labels it as a weakness. Makes sense. Like, oh, that means you don't care. No, like, you can still really care, but you can accept and let go of the range. And then now you can be grounded and commit to who you want to be and show up and, get after it, today. And like, even just think of like goal scoring and forwards. Like, it's like, if I can't accept not scoring today, well, I guarantee you're going to play a real tense. Like, if you can't willing to accept, like, you might not score. And I use this thing called the screw it analogy, which is, well, if you can't accept it, then maybe you should quit. I was like, I don't want you to quit, but like, it's the reality that you have the choice to, you can either, I need to, have to, should have to score mentality, or you can say, screw it, let it go, and I can accept it and just go play free and trust myself. And then there's a whole other category we don't want, which is like, well, I don't care at all, right? And a lot of people think, it's like, oh, well, we want this mindset where I don't care. I just got to stop caring about everything. It's like, not like that can work to a degree, but it's just not good. Like, you have bad habits and other things. Like, it's, you can care, but use acceptance. And that's this, middle ground, and remembering that it's a choice to play, by reflecting on like, hey, I could quit. Like, I don't have to play. Like, if you really can't accept you might not score next game, then maybe you shouldn't be playing hockey. Like, maybe it's not for you. Like, the reality is you might not. And it's like, and I'm not trying to get people to quit, but I'm just trying to like, remember that it's a choice. You get to play. Like, you like to play, you choose to play. So if you choose to play, how are you going to choose? Are you going to choose the acceptance, or are you going to choose the need to, have to, should, which leads to tension and overthinking, holding the stick. Right. And, so that's, a practical way. So that to me, acceptance is so fundamental. And it's like you said, like, people, oh, well, it's, I gotta be resistant. I don't like it. Like, yeah, no, you don't have to like it. You can accept it. Like, so, it's going to give you the source of power to move forward and commit and all kinds of other things.
Well, that, geez, I think you and I could probably talk all day, Cassidy. I know I've enjoyed the conversation. There's so many topics that we could dive into, but as far as everyone out there, Dr. Cassidy is a PhD, founder of CEP Mindset, helping athletes across all spectrums, including hockey, and has the book out now called Mindset First, and I'm sure it's going to be excellent. So, go get your copy out there today. And get it in the stockings maybe of your aspiring athlete. What a great little Christmas gift that would be. So, thanks so much, Cassidy. Anything else you want to talk about? Anything you want to promote or share as far as maybe where people can find you or follow you?
Yeah. So my website, the new one, is going to be drcassidypreston.com. So, and then my team and I are at cpmindset.com, and we're a bit on social media a little bit. At cpmindset on Instagram. Obviously, just reach out if anybody's got questions. I'd love to hear what people got out of the podcast, and we'll make sure to get we gotta get you on We have the Beyond the X and O's podcast. We've got some different people, but I think you'd be a great guest and dive more into your side and get that on our end as well. So
okay, awesome. Yeah, I'll take you up on that. That sounds great. So yeah. Thanks for your time today, and we'll reconnect on the flip side.
Yeah, thank you so much.
There you have it. Thank you for listening to the entire conversation with Cassidy. He was kind of what I was expecting. You know, I was expecting a man younger than me. I knew that he was a little bit younger than me. I knew that he'd been in the sport for a while. I knew that he would have a perspective from a hockey player's eyes, which I thought was great. And just a wealth of knowledge. And definitely admire him for the company that he's built. You know, there's a CEP Mindset is a big company. I mean, after we got off the call, you know, he talked about how many people that he has there, you know, how many people are working with him, and you know, the administration team that he has, and it's a full scale enterprise, and that is not an easy thing to build. So lots of respect for Dr. Cassidy there to be able to build what he's been and be able to build what he has and to be able to impact as many people as he has. That is not a small feat. So super cool. And Doc, if you're listening or somebody in your team, I do intend to continue the conversations. I love that I'm the elder statesman of the two of us, that you are farther along in the business journey. And I would love to have those conversations as a resource and hold you as a mentor when it comes to where Up My Hockey can get to. So fantastic stuff, which is maybe a good piece there, because I was talking to Dr. Cassidy afterwards about the team that he built. Like, that is one of the growth pieces for Up My Hockey, that it is getting too much for me as far as how many people would like to work with me and teams and associations, and I'm going to need some team members, somebody that can service the clients, the players, and the teams. And it seems like somebody, you know, who wants to do this as a career, that wants to coach young athletes, or maybe even older athletes. I always say young because I assume that anyone younger than me is young, but you know, in that teenage space, it seems to be a really great spot to be able to make a great impact. So if you are out there and if you're listening, or if you know somebody that's going maybe to school for this in sports psychology or has a hockey background and isn't sure what they want to do, but really believes in growth mindset and wants to be coached so they can become a coach, by all means, have them reach out through the website or through my email, jason@upmyhockey.com. Always looking for awesome team members that want to make an impact. Not only on the game, but really, I mean, just in your communities, you definitely have the ability to affect change. And as Dr. Cassie and I were talking about, you know, really on a cultural fundamental level of the sport, I think that this is the greatest opportunity working on mindset, character development, personal development to actually, you know, change our sport from the ground up. So if that's something that inspires you, or if you know somebody that would be inspired by that and would like to join my team and be my first official team member potentially at Up My Hockey, that would be fantastic. So it's come my way. Like I said, reach me at jason@upmyhockey.com or through the website, through the contact form, and I'd love to have a conversation and see where that could go. And I guess that's it for this episode. Really appreciate you being here with me. And again, I mean, we talked about it during the episode, but there are so many options out there. For me, obviously, I'd love to service you, your son or your daughter, and help them become the best athlete they can be. That really is something that I'm passionate about. So by no means am I deflecting your potential business somewhere else, but there are lots of options. There are, you know, if you want to look and if you want to be curious about it. And I just, at the end of the day, that is really what Dr. Cassidy and I want, is for you to be your best, whoever that is, son, daughter, father, mother, coach, GM out there. Like, we want the best for your players. We want the best for you. And a journey and an exploration through mindset and your own personal belief system and how you choose to operate in your space is a very worthwhile adventure and one that is best served with a navigating force like a coach. So I suggest you find one, get someone on your team, make the most out of this opportunity that's in front of you right now. And until next time, you play hard and keep your head up.